And you are listening to WSEA 106.1 on your FM dial, and we are streaming live online at WSEAFM.org. My name is Mark, and I host the Tuesday Night Metal Show, Black Knight Meditations, featuring Black Death, Thrash, Power, Shred, Prog, and Folk Metal. And those of you who know me are aware of what a huge fan I've been of the Norwegian black metal band Emperor since 1995, when their classic In the Nightside Eclipse was released. And I've stated on air many times that their 1997 album, Anthems to the Welkin at Dusk, finest ever in metal history. And while Emperor no longer exists, Main Medicine has released two amazing solo albums, among other projects, and is about to release his third album after next week. I've got Metal God Ihsahn on the phone right now. He's joining us from his home in Norway. Hey, Ihsahn, when you're referred to as a metal god or anything else that places you on a throne, I mean, how does that make you feel? Do you laugh it off, or do you feel embarrassed, or say, yeah, I am all those things?
I don't know. I think it. Living in my hometown of Norway, I think that gives me a very healthy perspective on all this. And I think I don't let that sort of thing get to me really much. I've experienced some stuff when we've been on tour with Emperor or whatever, that people have a very, very strong connection to music that I've been, you know, happened to be part of playing. So in that sense, when I meet people you would refer to as fans, you know, I always respect the fact that what I represent to them is just kind of the surface of a lot of things they have personally invested of, you know, their own feelings and own experiences to music that I happen to be part of. And I've had a similar experience, you know, when I've met some of my heroes, musical heroes, and they are just down to earth, regular, very nice people, and the base experience is, you know, how much I invested and how much I made the music I listened to mean to me. So I related in that matter. It doesn't change me. You know, if people like that what I'm doing, you know, that's great. And but it can't be changing my view on myself or the music I do.
I'm just wanting to know if you still feel the same way that people feel about you with your heroes. I mean, do you still feel that way about somebody?
Well, I guess it's having grown older, of course. I mean, I'm not a teenager anymore, so you relate to things in a different way. But probably in my position, I've also been able to meet some of my old-time heroes and come to experience that they're just, you know, regular human flesh and blood people.
Right, exactly.
So that, of course, changes things because it's some of the magic. I mean, when I saw Iron Maiden when I was 13, you know, just the thought of being within the same four walls of the same venue as Iron Maiden, you know, that the magic of that. But earlier, you know, last year I had the privilege of meeting Nick McBrien,
oh, nice.
You know, from on the Metal Hammer Awards in England, and actually ended up hanging out with Bruce Dickinson's son for a while, and it kind of changes your perspective, but not the respect. And I've also been lucky to make an acquaintance with Rob Halford,
yeah,
you know, of Judas Priest,
right,
which is a fantastic guy and, you know, a very, very nice person as well. You know, really enjoyable to be around. But then again, you know, I never get over the fact, you know, I'm here with, he's the metal god.
Right.
You know, so some people are beyond, you know, getting too familiar with.
Right, I understand. And I spoke with Rob Halford a year ago, and he speaks very highly of you. And this will be yet another reminder that us fans have not forgotten about Rob's desire to work on a musical project with you. So we certainly hope that will happen in the future. But of course, before that can happen, you've got to worry about promoting your new album After, which comes out here in the States next week. And since you're the kind of guy who spends a lot of time in the studio, and you seem to be a musician's musician, how do you feel about having to do press for your releases? I mean, do you consider interviews a necessary evil, or do you enjoy discussing your work?
I mean, I've been doing this since I was 16. I've always almost been doing this kind of professionally for almost 20 years. Well, I'm 34 now. So I'm getting used to this being part of the whole process of making an album and releasing an album. It's kind of part of the game. And in some way, I feel, of course, I'm aware of the slightly ironic and commercial aspect of actually doing interviews, and you know, it's there to make people aware. You know, it is what it is.
Right.
But then again, I mean, I compared to earlier on when I was younger, I was more concerned about what to say and what not to say, and you know, how to present myself. But these days, I mean, I've come to a point where almost like with all the type of stupid things that I've said and uttered in interviews in the past, and so little that actually, you know, backfired at me.
Mm.
You know, I'm much more at ease with everything, and I tend to try and keep, you know, and do interviews more like a regular conversation. And
me too, try absolutely.
That way I can't, you know, describe and answer the question that people have for me, and appreciate the interest they take in my work.
Yeah, and I agree with you on being conversational. I try to do that myself when speaking with people, instead of doing just a regular Q&A, just, you know, try to have a conversation. But I guess for you, the downside of doing so much press is that people are always going to ask about your music from when you were a teenager. You know, that was half your life ago. You've been so far removed from that now, and you're still going to get asked about that. But again, that goes back to the interest that people have in what you do. And, you know, the emperor dorks and geeks who come up to you and, you know, want to bow at your presence. It's all about, you know, I guess it could be a musical news for you. I mean, do you ever feel that those fan expectations and success of your previous band, does that weigh on you whenever you're writing for your Isan records?
Well, I think that for me, it kind of has an opposite effect, in a sense that at the end of Emperor, I think I felt the pressure of so many people having opinions of what Emperor should or should not be. And that's kind of you know, like waving a red cloth in front of my eyes, you know, to people trying to dictate my music. And that whole feeling, I mean, that's kind of the opposite of why we started to play black metal in the first place.
Right.
I think in the beginning, when doing my first solo albums, I think I felt more frustrated by the fact that many people probably considered the albums I did when I was 17, you know, better, and that was my peak, you know. But I cannot believe that, you know. If I believed that, there would be no reason for me to continue.
Right, there's nowhere else for you to go, absolutely.
During the few years now that I've been doing these solo albums, I've grown more confident as a solo artist, and with that fundament beneath me, I think it's easier for me to come to terms with the fact that my work will always be kind of compared and related to my work in Emperor. Mm-hmm. And I kind of respect that, in the sense that I too am that nostalgic about some of the albums that I grew up with. And on the other hand, there's a lot of people who say, well, you know, I like your solo stuff, but you should really get back together with Emperor and do another Emperor album. And I think, I don't know if people really know what they're asking, in that sense that Emperor, I think the reason why Emperor kind of got this almost as a phenomenon, got life on its own, kind of beyond the people who played in Emperor, is because we were always very uncompromising. And I think that if we did, you know, did an Emperor album, another Emperor album out of demand, you know, I think if that was not what we originally wanted to, but obviously it would be, you know, financially very lucrative and all that, but that would probably, I think, in my opinion, that would be making everything emperor ever stood for into a lie. So I think the way I try to see it is that the only way I can honor the fact, and if you can call them fans, of my music, you know, and the opportunity I've been given to have a musical career and kind of indulge in this passion I have for music, is by continuing to do the best possible music I can in the most honest way that I can.
Well, I think we
and
get
I'll
that.
Try to fool myself or anyone else.
We get that. We get your indulgence. Actually, the indulgence that you describe, I mean, your Ihsahn albums, the third one coming out next week, I'm ready to call that one a masterpiece, and I've only had that album a few days. I like The Adversary quite a bit. I thought Angel was even better, but this one, it just seems like this one, I finally feel that, yes, he's kind of perfected what he's been doing. It's like you started with The Adversary, you continued it with the second record, Angel, and now with After. I feel this eclipses your previous albums, which were both great. I mean, I prefer this over the last two Emperor albums easily. And your album, but what I like about your writing is that it's very diverse. I mean, you stay within the realm of metal, but you're very, very diverse. You include saxophone in your music. At times, it's all over the place. Do you feel that you can write and record anything for an Ihsahn album, no matter how diverse or even non-metal it is? Because you have plenty of music that would not be considered metal at all, but it works perfectly. So do you feel that anything is appropriate for an Ihsahn album?
Well, first of all, thank you, I guess. No, to start with the beginning of your question first, I mean, I agree with you that the first three albums, it's kind of a full development. I think that's why during the writing of my first solo album, I decided to make the first three albums into a trilogy so that I didn't have to, you know, do it all at once on one album, you know, that I can, you know, at least try to foresee some kind of continuity and a bigger picture. And with the first album, musically, it was kind of all over the place within, you know, with subgenres within the big term of metal. And there were so many, you know, edges of metal and that I'd never tried before, I mean, like almost early 70s and the Priest stuff that inspired me, you know, some progressive stuff, some more typical death metal stuff, some more regular heavy metal stuff. And I wanted to have a go at all that in the process of kind of creating a new musical fundament for myself as a solo artist. And with Angel, I think I just tried to focus in on that fundament and try to, you know, take the best parts out of what I developed during the writing of The Adversary. And coming to the third album, kind of concluding trilogy, I think mostly on a subconscious level, I wanted to not make it in context with the previous two, but maybe not the most logical next step. You know, I wanted it to be a diverse album in the sense that it didn't bind me to one, you know, specific way of working, because that's what I think happened with Emperor. It kind of got painted into a musical corner where there was just so much we could do within that, you know, framework. And I don't want my own solo project to become like that. So I feel after this third album, I feel very liberated in the thought of doing a fourth album, because there were, this last album doesn't really point too concretely at what the fourth one should be, you know, and that makes the whole process more interesting for me as well, and that's what I like about it. I don't want to make the same type of album twice, you know. I'm in this for the excitement of working with music.
Well, wow, After is not even officially released yet. I'm already looking forward to hearing that fourth album, just because now I expect it to sound different. I already look forward to that. You know, I love the use of the saxophone on this new record. You know, some people might think maybe use of a sax might be out of place. You know, the Finnish band Amorphis used a saxophone on several songs years ago, and it worked. And it works perfectly on your songs. And I like the fact you didn't use them to replace, like, guitar soloing, but you rather used it to create some, at times, seriously demented sounds. I mean, like the saxophone use on the song "A Grave Inversed," I don't think mentally ill people should ever hear that song. It's like the oral equivalent of insanity. It just sounds crazy, but yet it works. I mean, how did you come up with the saxophone parts on that particular song? Because it sounds insane.
On the Grave and Glory.
Right.
Well, the whole idea of having saxophone on the album, I mean, wanting to have saxophone in my music is for me a very old idea, because I always really like the sound of the saxophone. I always associated with a very solitary and kind of desolate vibe. And in the tradition of having kind of guest soloists on my solo albums, like I had Garm from Over on the first one, Michael from Opus on the second one, I wanted to have a kind of guest soloist, or but not a vocalist this time, very much due to a rather different concept for the whole album. So I wanted something really personal and something that could, you know, stand out from, you know, my twiddlings. So I thought it was a good idea to try out the saxophone thing. And to cut a long story short, I ended up in the end with using Jörgen Munkeby, who really, I think, connected in a perfect way to what I wanted. And in a mixture of, you know, following the lead lines that I wanted him to do, and also doing fantastic stuff with the open parts where I wanted him to improvise.
Well, it does sound improvised at times.
There was kind of a risk there that the saxophone could, you know, lie on top and you know, almost seem like it was there just for the shock effect.
Right.
But my intention was always to have it blend in a similar way that, you know, I've used orchestral strings and brass, you know, sampled brass before, just as part of the arrangement. And at least I'm very happy with the result.
I am too.
But to answer your question, you know, in particular about the Graven verse, where it was just, because we did the other parts first, where it kind of blends in more naturally, you know, doing slow lines and more, you know, slow epic stuff. But with the Graven verse, we thought it would be, you know, interesting to try and have him play, you know, and double the guitar parts. But even though it's mixed kind of low, even the first, you know, in the first riffs, he's kind of doing multi layers with saxophone and different kind of doubling all the guitar parts.
Well,
you don't really realize that the saxophone is there until it hits off with, you know, this rather far out improvisational solo.
Yeah, you're right. At times you wouldn't even realize you're listening to a saxophone. And at times it sounds like improv, like on the song On the Shores. I want to get into, I know you got to go soon, but I want to get into lyrics. There are no lyrics in this booklet, so I don't yet know the lyrics and the themes on this album. But you have four titles that have a kind of connection. On the Shores, Undercurrent, Frozen Lakes on Mars, and Heaven's Black Sea. Is there an aquatic connection in these songs?
Yeah, I mean, in comparison to the previous two albums, as I presented as kind of a trilogy, I mean, just to put it in some context, the first two albums are, I decided early on, that's why I called it the first one, The Adversary. I was very concrete about, I wanted to be, you know, in the metal or black metal spirit, so to speak, to be an adversary. And it's very confrontational, very in your face. It's very Nietzsche inspired. So both The Adversary and Angel are very much like that. But to end off that, I kind of, you know, all along I've been very, very Nietzsche inspired, in particular for these albums. But my favorite Nietzsche book is the Zarathustra book, you know, the Space Zarathustra. Much because it has this beautiful language. So beneath all these very clear and rather clear-cut ideas, there's almost this, you know, religious, you know, beauty in this kind of very ungodly philosophy of his. And for me too, I mean, in my you know, dealing with all of this from a very early age until, you know, a grown age, I found it interesting for this album to go a bit, you know, beneath the more contemporary conflicts that I dealt with in the previous two albums, similar images in my head and a similar, you know, vibe and source of inspiration as when I did my, you know, With Strength I Burn on the Anthems album. So the inspirations for and scenario for this album is very much more about what lies beneath the more apparent things that I did on the previous two. And that's why I think I refer to you know, the sea in that sense, you know, those huge, slow movements of the sea that are very much eternal. And like undercurrent, as you say, and definitely undercurrent, the stormy undercurrent, and on the shores has this connection in the sense that they share the same saxophone melody, even though the accompanying chords and riffs are different. You know, it's the same melody that goes to kind of binds the album together with those two songs. And it's just something fascinating and symbolic with that. Like the lyrics on the shores, you know, these rocky shores are crafted by the pulse of the sea. You know, some just very slowly and gradually, you know, formed by something that is very, you know, eternal.
I happen to think.
I guess that it sounds totally just both pretentious and far fetched, but it's
well,
just
it works.
Trying my best to explain that.
You know, the U.S. has been a pretty good supporter of Emperor over the years, and thus Isan as well. This is your third record now, and do you feel any kind of pressure to expand your music to different markets? Is that something that your record label, for instance, Candlelight here in the U.S., make any sort of effort to kind of make you more accessible to different markets, or do they just leave you alone and say, look, you do what you do, you're Isan, go for it?
Candlelight has never, ever interfered in any way on how I do my music or not. So that has been a relationship where I've had absolutely total creative freedom. So, and we, to this day, you know, I never worked with a producer or anything. I guess I've been lucky like that, that no one has really tried to. There's been pressure from different departments to, you know, to do more touring, do more of this, and, you know, the more commercial way of thinking, next level, this or that. But I mean, I think we've always been more or less respected for how we and I have wished to do stuff. So,
well,
and I think especially for this genre of music, it's very much about, you know, integrity and not so much about trying to do stuff to fit a certain market. So I guess lately, since my music has evolved more from over the years from more traditional black metal related stuff into I guess a bit of a broader musical landscape, you know, there's some elements that may appeal to people outside traditional black metal stuff, and maybe, you know, the more traditional black metal fans will think it's a bit too much, you know. So I know they're trying to push the album in magazines that I would and stuff that I necessarily would probably not have been featured in. But I you know, never really think that too much about the whole promotion process. I try to just follow up my bit as best as I can.
The new album after. The lyrics aren't printed in the booklet, but when I first noticed no lyrics in the booklet, I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, Isan doesn't want to share the lyrics to the record. But then I thought, well, I'm guessing it's because of the art direction, because I don't think printing the lyrics in the booklet would fit with the art that is in the booklet. Is it an issue of art direction? Is that why the lyrics are not printed in the booklet?
Yes, this is the first album I think I've ever done that where we didn't print the lyrics, and to me the lyrics are just as, you know, important as they ever was. But it's just given the nature of the whole album, the music in itself, the concept of the album, and also the artwork. I think the artwork, the way it's presented, and just with these short quotes from the lyrics, kind of emphasized the atmosphere I was going for more than if you have everything, you know, on black and white.
Right. And the cover of the record features the Graveyard Cross, and I was thinking that represented the album title, but I wasn't sure if it stood for afterlife or after death. But then looking at the other pictures and the few words that are printed inside, it would seem the song Austere is what's being represented. Were these pictures taken specifically for the album?
No, these are actually, my wife's pictures.
Right.
Because she's been doing photography for many years, and she still does, you know, and she has a very good working collaboration with our regular designer, Rachel Starris, and they've been working on many covers together for, you know, my previous stuff, her Star of Ash albums, and different things, and actually been giving some more like, design awards, like in computer arts, magazines and stuff like that. They have a very good working relationship. So this time I wanted her and her kind of involvement on the album to be, and especially the artwork to be even greater. I mean, she's been invaluable for me for the whole album. She found these are actually very old pictures that she took about the time when we first got together.
Mm-hmm.
Which was probably 12, 13 years ago. And it's a kind of a special place, that graveyard, everything, and it just fits very much with the whole emotion. And having that series of photos from, you know, way back then and kind of fit into this new thing, I think it's... I could go into detail here about the concept and so my thoughts about it, but it's that would be, you know, beyond the extent of this.
Right. Yeah, I think we could probably talk for an hour just on that. So all of the music and lyrics were written before the photos were chosen.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. These photos are. That's why you have that kind of color bleed, like on the front cover. You know,
I was going to ask you about that. There's like a splash of faded purple on the cover. I was wondering if there's any significance to that.
No, that's how the originals are. Because this was way before digital. So that bleed is on the original photocopy because she would, of course, develop this herself in the darkroom. Mm. And if you don't get all the chemicals off, you know, properly, you know, that will create that kind of yellowish and this kind of strange color bleed, like you would get on old black and white photos.
Mm. Have you?
They're kind of presented the way they are. And that's, you know, it's something, for me at least, that gives the whole texture very genuine thing.
It's
so much
genuine
you can do digitally now that you it's that type of genuine feel
that's
very,
what
very good for the whole artwork, I think.
That's exactly what I was thinking, that now that you're saying that, you know, these are originals and, you know, nothing was done to change like the color bleed there, I was thinking it makes it pretty genuine. Absolutely. Have you at ever any time in your career ever composed music based on a photo or a piece of art?
Strangely, this album in particular is given that this is a much more abstract album in many ways. I've had a lot of photographies on and different artwork and pictures on my laptop as kind of an inspirational source. Everything from more traditional landscape art to more like satellite surface shots of Mars and some from the steppe. Of Siberia, stuff like that, and at the end of the process, also some of the Goya paintings, so for this album in particular, it's been a lot of kind of visual inspiration.
Is that something that the photos and artwork that you're referring to, is that something that might be inspiring the fourth album? I know we're looking way ahead in the future here by a couple of years, but do you think that far ahead where if you see something that inspires you, you keep it in memory, that you want to use that toward inspiration towards future work?
Well, yeah, it definitely. I think it's been, I don't know if you talked about this last time, in general, for this album, on many levels, it's the way I've written the music and all that. It has been much less analytical and much less to the detail. I think I've been better at just listening for what had to come next, you know, in each song. And I think that it's also much inspired by, you know, there's nothing so concrete, you know, like on the previous two solo albums I did, they were very much to the point lyrically, very harsh and very direct, you know, getting a point across.
Right.
And this time it's much more, you know, almost meditative. And that's the kind of direction I would like to at least, you know, continue to work with in the future, because it takes a bit deeper than what is too concrete, you know, working with more abstract sources of inspiration.
Well, you mentioned before about with After now kind of completing a trilogy of albums under the Ihsahn moniker. Should we be expecting something radically different? Do you anticipate something different for a fourth record? I mean, would you even consider releasing an album under maybe your own name? In fact, instead of like say Ihsahn, or creating another name if you feel that something is that drastically different?
Well, it all depends. I guess it's for the sake of keeping things in a bit of an order. You know, I've been involved with, you know, different projects over the year, with kind of giving it different names, and depending on, you know, who I've collaborated with. So I think that, you know, for my Ihsahn project, so to speak, I guess I will keep that within the framework of. Some form of, you know, metal relation, but on the other hand, I feel with this being kind of a final chapter of the trilogy, I think, you know, I feel a bit more liberated thinking about, you know, a fourth album, because it doesn't really point too much, you know, in which direction the next one should be if you're thinking, you know, kind of some kind of continuity.
Right.
So I still feel that the fourth album is quite open. So if I were to change it, you know, away, like I won't release, you know, a bagpipe album under the Ihsahn kind of project label. So nothing that radical, but I would, you know, it's always room for you know. Pushing the envelope of also within the metal parameters, you know,
that is
as a challenge, and that I always find very exciting and inspirational. So.
Well, and that's something you've been doing on your three solo records, you know, the three Ihsahn records, is, you know, you keep pushing the boundaries with each album, and I think you've perfected it with After, because as I said before, I think it's basically a masterpiece. It's one of the very few records that as soon as I heard it, upon first listen, I'm like, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. You know, I couldn't say that about The Adversary or Angel, but it's just, I mean, it's the first two records were great. This one is just, I do feel like it kind of, it kind of puts a cap on that trilogy. You know, you mentioned trilogy before, and I kind of got that vibe when listening to After. I kind of felt like this does kind of feel like a completion of a trilogy. And again, it makes me look forward to that fourth record. I know it's a couple of years in the future, but I'm already looking forward to it. You mentioned your wife, and I have a wife as well. And when I can't make a decision on something, or I'm stuck or whatever, I'll ask her advice or for her help. And, you know, that's what mates do for each other. And obviously you've collaborated with your wife before in other projects, like Pecatum, for instance. I love Pecatum. But for songwriting on your Ihsahn albums, have you ever asked her for assistance, given her musical background? Did you ever go to her for help?
Oh yeah, definitely. All the time. She's definitely my kind of almost, you know, like an invisible band member, especially when you work in the studio like I do, and you get very subjective, you know, when you're wearing all the hats. Mm-hmm. And even the previous two albums, I even, you know, mixed the albums myself. So, you know, you're supposed to be the songwriter, performer, producer, engineer, you know, everything. And with the nature of us, you know, working so much together, I mean, we play similar parts, you know, whether we, you know, do albums together under Pecatum, or as we did with Harding Rock, or if we do separate albums, you know, me with my Ihsahn stuff, she with Star of Ash. She's working on the new album right now. We're always, you know, running ideas by each other. She's been, probably because I've been more confident in my solo work for this third album, you know, being more confident for each album. I've been better also at listening to other people's input, and in particular her, because I really trust her opinion. So when she says something, you know, it's good enough for, let's say, vocal takes or harmony parts or stuff like that, I trust that. You know, and she will definitely tell me if something sucks too. So, but that's the very, you know, privileged position we are in, that we are very independent in that sense, and we have someone whose opinion we both of us trust. You know,
right.
I've been very lucky like that.
Right, well, you know, again, that's what mates are for. That's what a wife is for, to tell the husband what they're doing wrong. That's what they're for. This is WSEA 106.1 on your FM dial. We're streaming live online at WSEAFM.org. My name is Mark, and I'm speaking with Ihsan. And Ihsan, a listener has asked us to ask you, why didn't you play all the bass yourself on the album after, and actually on everything, because we know that you do play bass, so why not just do it all yourself?
Well, for the first album, I also did the bass, you know, usually because I've always done that. Even with, you know, the last two Emperor albums, I always ended up just doing the bass parts as an extension of, you know, doing mostly guitar parts. So it was really with the second album, with Angel, that through Oskar Mikkelsson, who does the drums, he suggested, you know, would you like my bass player from Spiral Arctic, Lars, to, you know, have a go? Because obviously Lars is, I think he went out from Berkeley, like top 10%, you know, of bass players. Mm. So he's an immense talent, and of course he's a real bass player compared to me. And I was a bit skeptical at first, usually because it's, I was kind of stuck in the same time. I'm used to doing it myself. But I gave him a couple of tracks of the previous album just to see how he interpreted the stuff and what he added. And it didn't take me many listens before I wanted him on the whole album. And it was just a natural choice to use him on this album as well. Again, you know, the both Oskar and Lars, I've also given them a bit more space over the course of these three albums. You know, they've been given more space for, you know, pitching in ideas for lines and everything. Like Jörgen Munkeby's contribution on saxophone as well, it makes it all, you know, having other people's contributions to it, you know, it makes the music more objective to me as well. So I get some surprises, and it's not just my playing and just my voice and, you know, just my mixing or whatever. So it's, in a way, it's just easier for me to enjoy it on a more, you know, much more as a listener rather than just being, you know, the technically occupied with all the details and, you know, how I should change this or that.
Right. You get asked about performing live quite often. I'm sure every interview you do, people ask you about playing live. It's just been announced you're going to be playing at the Inferno Festival. But for the, not just the Inferno Festival coming up, but specifically with the few shows you've done in the past, has there been any filming of your live performances?
Yeah, actually, I filmed my debut show when I supported Opus last year in March. At Oslo Rockefeller, same place as the Inferno Festival is going. And I filmed that with a handycam,
right,
from behind the stage. Mm-hmm. That's actually that full represented in full on the special edition of this album. That's
right.
Kind of bonus material.
Right, yeah, the extra disc, right. What about filming upcoming shows, like specifically the Inferno Fest or any other upcoming shows? Do you think you might do some, whether handheld camera filming or maybe bringing in somebody, even if it's just one camera or two camera shot? Because what I'm getting at is, because sooner or later, the fans are going to be screaming for a DVD release. And of course, that brings up live shows being filmed. So what do you think the chances are?
I haven't really gotten that far in the planning. I mean, at this point, we're still working out the rest of the European shows and just see how it goes. And given I'm very confident in in the whole live thing right now, given my, I have a very good backing band, you know, very professional people, so all that is in order in a way. But I think maybe it's just me being a bit careful. I mean, I think it's a bit over-eager to, you know, try and release live albums or live DVDs, you know, up to just like 9 or 10 shows.
Right, but that's you know, that's the fanboy in me, though. You know, I want to see this stuff, and a lot of your fans would love, you know, to see, you know, whether it's you know, a handheld camera from the back of the stage, or, you know, one guy in the crowd, or even if it's, you know, bootleg footage. You know, we want to see anything we can, especially those of us in North America or any other part of the world who don't get to see you live and don't get to travel over to Europe, and we'd kill to see you live over here. Speaking of live set, have you gotten that close to putting together a set list, or are you not there yet?
Yeah, we're more or less there. We, you know, we still, you know, have some of the material in from, you know, in the repertoires from the previous shows. I mean, we even did two a bit separate shows for the two shows I've done already. So I don't feel that the set is overused. But we're adding 3 or 4 songs depending on the length of the set. Mm-hmm. We're playing from the new album as well.
Yeah, what new songs from after will you be adding to the set, or do you think you will be?
Well, I thought that was going to be a surprise.
Ah, come on. It'll be a surprise today. Well, my vote is for Undercurrent. I love every song on the record, but Undercurrent's probably my favorite. That's an ambitious one to do live, but all the more reason for you to try it live. So that's my vote for Undercurrent.
Yeah, okay, I'll see about that. No, it's also a mixture of, I mean, Jörgen Munkeby. And saxophone player.
Right.
He's also that they released their album at the same time as me. It came out in Europe yesterday, and yeah, as you said earlier on, my album came out in the US today. So
right.
He's already touring with his band Shining.
And that's Shining is a fantastic
song,
band.
You know, it would, if I didn't have the saxophone on them on the record, they would probably work still. You know, but now that people have heard him on the record, you know, it won't be the same without the saxophone. So.
True. I mean, I guess you could sample it, you know, but yeah, it wouldn't exactly be the same. Now, so before I let you go, I do want to ask you about your past projects that you've done, like with your wife Pacatum, and also Thou Shalt Suffer, among others. Specifically with Pacatum, I know that's something that you and your wife ended a couple of years ago. Would the door ever be open to re-exploring Pacatum's music in that, whether a new record or any sort of other release? I mean, is Pacatum dead for good?
Well, it all depends where it takes us, really, because I think there's a very good chance that we will be working together, you know, more or less, you know, within the same project, but whether that we will go back to calling that Pacatum, or if we do it in some other form, or depending on... I mean, we did work together in a similar manner on a project called Harding Rock. Where we...
That was a great record.
With the Norwegian Fiddler, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good record.
So it all depends. But I mean, we do this on a... You know, we work with music here at the studio on a daily basis. So I would say the chances are very good at us, you know, collaborating on this stuff.
Well, what I liked about Pacatum is that it worked in so many different influences. I mean, at times it was metal, at times it wasn't, but it just worked, and that was the beauty of Pacatum, because it was all over the place, and you ended it on a high note too. So at some point, I'd love to hear something along those lines, maybe another Pacatum release in the future. So hopefully, that's, you know, like you said.
Who knows? It's, I wouldn't say it's an impossibility, you know.
Right.
but so far it's nothing planned. I mean, okay. It's. We still have stuff to do. I mean, she's been doing you know, soundtrack music for film with Star of Ash. We're actually recording drums for a third Star of Ash album this weekend. So there's you know, we need to kind of finish off projects as well before we plan something new. But there's always talk of, you know, potential things that would be exciting to do. So.
Awesome.
We'll do our best, either way.
All right. I certainly look forward to it. Ines-san, thank you again very much for your time. After the new record, I'm calling it a masterpiece now. It's just an absolutely amazing record. And thank you very much for
it. Thank you
very much. I love it very much. And it is out. Everybody, I recommend this album absolutely highly. I mean, BraveWords.com just gave it a rating of 10, and I absolutely support that in every way. Ison, thank you very much. Again, good luck with the new record, and hopefully we'll
thank
talk to you soon.
Thank you for the support.
And hopefully we'll see you in North America.
Come back next time if I do another album in some form.
Oh, you better do another album. Your fans will come after you if you don't. All right, thanks, Ison. Take care, brother.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Take care.